Hello, everybody. Welcome to Studio Soundtracks. This is a fair warning that this show will be hearing lots of explicit lyrics as we play the songs from the hit series Hazbin Hotel, which is a mature-themed adult cartoon. Now, with that disclaimer out of the way, let's go.
Okay, I've got a lot to get through and not a lot of time, and I feel like you weren't hearing me before, so here goes. I know Hell's population is out of control. It's a bad situation, it's taking a toll. If we rehab these sinners and cleanse all their souls at my Hazbin Hotel. Wait, I'm getting ahead of myself, right? Extermination! I know you guys fly down just to kill once a year, and it must be annoying to schlep all the way here. If they join you in heaven, that trip disappears. You can wave at your farewell. It'll be a happy day.
Let me stop you right there. Save us all precious time.
Okay.
If what you're suggesting is letting them climb up the ladder, oh, they'd rather cross the pearly gates.
Well,
sorry, sweetie, but there's no defying their fate. 'Cause hell is forever, whether you like it or not. Have their chance to behave better, now they boil in the pot. 'Cause the rules are black and white, there's no use in trying to fight it. They're burning for their lives until we kill them again.
Okay,
just try to chillax, babe. Wasting your breath. Did I hear you imply that they don't deserve death? Are they winners? Are they sinners? 'Cause it's cut and dry.
Well, actually,
fair is fair, an eye for an eye. Yeah. When all said and done, there's the question of fun. And for those of us with divine ordainment, extermination is it or not, have their chance to behave better. Now they boil in the pot. 'Cause the rules are black and white. There's no use in trying to fight it. They're burning for their lives until we kill them again. Fucking hell's forever and it's meant to suck a lot. So give up your dumb endeavor, 'cause you don't have a shot. Long as I got your attention, I guess I should probably mention that we've made the determination to move up the next extermination. I know it's just been a week, but we'll be back in 6 months!
Wait, can you...
Welcome everyone to Studio Soundtracks, the monthly program that takes listeners behind the scenes of making music for film and television. I'm your host, Chandler Poling. It's a happy day in hell today as we have two very special guests on the show, songwriters Sam Haft and Andrew Underberg of the sensational animated series Hazbin Hotel. Welcome to you both, gentlemen.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having us.
Greetings. Yes, thank you.
Now, your soundtrack to Hazbin Hotel has crossed 1 billion streams and has sat 11 consecutive weeks at number one on Billboard's top soundtracks chart this year. Big congrats to the huge success. How does it feel?
I would say kind of surreal. It feels very abstract in that, you know, you're looking at wonderful numbers through a screen, but it is still, you're kind of alienated from the reception a little bit. Although one thing that I've done that I have successfully peer pressured Andrew into joining me soon is appeared at a Comic Con. I've been a guest at a couple, you know, Comic Cons around the US, and that I feel like really creates a sense of perspective of just how many people are listening to the soundtrack and just how much they're listening to it.
Yeah, I will say, sorry, Andrew, I just have to jump in because I'm a big Comic-Con person. I go to many of them throughout the year and I see the cosplay. I see the love of the show. And I just have to completely back you up on that, that is a crazy reality to step into and see the visibility of what Hazbin means to people. But Andrew, jump in. How does it feel to see all these streams? You haven't been to a Comic-Con yet. Have you been interacting with any fans?
No, none. But I look forward to seeing some in Columbus in December. That's the Comic-Con I was thinking of joining Sam. And yeah, that whole world is very new to me and unknown, but I'm looking forward to trying it out. Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah, it's an interesting fan base because the fans are so devoted that I feel like in the wider world, I've talked to a lot of people who have no idea what the show is. There's this group who love it so much, and sort of like musical theatery, sort of I guess Comic-Con type fans, for whom it is very much like that's the demographic, I would say. So it is interesting being able to both be completely unknown to many people, as well as have many others listening to one's songs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love the show, and the music you wrote for it is so catchy and addictive. I want to know, how did you first come to be a part of the Hazbin Hotel family?
Ooh, there's quite a lot of background to that. The quickest version of this is that Vivian Medrano, who's the showrunner and creator of Hazbin Hotel, has another show set in hell called Hell of a Boss. Now, I was writing some songs for that show for about a year and a half, and she assigned me a K-pop style song. And I knew that Andrew had been working in the K-pop world. And Andrew and I went to high school together. So like we've known each other, and we've pulled on projects together on and off. And so at that point I said, well, you know, if you're comfortable with it, I'd love to call in another songwriter and partner with him on this one. And, it was very well received. In short order, we ended up getting assigned another four or five songs, which we completed rather quickly. And I think it just happened to come right at the time that was just before Viv was staffing up for Hazbin Hotel. And so we managed to make this very strong impression as a creative team just before it came time to offer somebody that job. And so we were front of mind.
Andrew, how long have you two been collaborating as songwriters?
Well, Sam and I guess the first song we wrote together was that first song for Hell of a Boss, Clown Bitch. But we had... Yeah, Sam mentioned we've known each other for really a long time.
20 years.
A lot, and I've helped Sam with another music project of his, so we'd done recording together and done production together. But yeah, Clown Bitch was our first, I think, yeah, is that right?
That was our first co-write, absolutely.
First real collaboration on a song. And yeah, it was so fun, and then we did... Yeah, as Sam said, we did a few more different styles, and I think that's something that I very much appreciate about our collaboration, which is that we come from a little bit of different, I feel like, musical background in terms of like what we like to listen to, and that I think makes what we do together much more interesting than if just one of us is kind of like on autopilot.
Totally. Yeah. It's as a duo, we are very kind of chocolate and peanut butter, not chocolate and chocolate. We are, you know, we have different kind of complementing interests and influences.
Yeah. And I think I feel like our most interesting songs are ones where we're really utilizing those differences. Each person contributing in their own special way.
Yes. Well, you guys, yeah, you definitely have created magic with Hazbin Hotel. And we opened the show with the song Hell is Forever, performed by the incredible Alex Brightman and Erica Henningsen. Did you two know who was cast in the roles before writing the songs, or did you write the songs hoping that the vocalist they cast could nail it?
So with few exceptions, we knew who the cast was going to be. That said, even knowing who the cast was going to be, we did not know how they would all sound. So, you know, Alex Brightman is a great example because he is such a vocal chameleon. We had no idea how the character of Adam would sound, although we had a vague idea. I mean, I think in our heads, it was very kind of Jack Black, which was very appropriate because Alex had been played the Jack Black role in School of Rock on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And then I think we had thought of, and I think, in part because it's such an iconic role for Alex, I think we had spent more time thinking about his kind of grimy Beetlejuicy voice when it came time for him to sing the parts of Serpentius, which turned out to be miles off from the kind of voice that he was bringing to that character. So sometimes even knowing what actor it was not enough for us to really know what they would sound like. And I would say the one character whose actor we weren't 100% positive who they would be when we started writing songs was Lucifer.
Now, what is your songwriting process like as a duo? Are you guys tackling songs separately? Are you writing a verse here, sharing it with the person, saying, what do you think? I'm just curious about how that kind of collaboration works.
A lot of sharing. We were just writing up a little intro for a coming songbook. We're describing it as tweaking, just tweaking constantly. Two grown men tweaking each other. And that's really what it is. We don't even live in the same city. So most of our collaboration is, over Zoom and, sharing Logic files on Dropbox. And my favorite thing, and this has happened quite a few times, is like kind of hitting a wall on something I was working on and being like, Sam, I don't know what comes next. And then like getting up the next morning and finding that Sam, who's a few hours earlier on LA time, has come up with the perfect chorus or next verse or whatever for the song we're working on. And it's really no better feeling than just like, excellent.
It is very much like being a cobbler and waking to find that the elves have put your shoes together. we are each other's elves.
That's great.
It really is a highly iterative process. Like that is, I think there's no better way to describe it in that, you know, we will kick off a song with a Zoom. And then from there, one or the other of us will start a Logic file and doodle something, you know, generally that's kind of on a volunteer system. It's, you know, I might say, oh, actually, I think I really have an idea for this. Yeah. Or Andrew may say, oh, you know what? I think I know what to do with this. And one of us will volunteer to start the project file. And then we will essentially trade it back and forth and Zoom in between iterations.
Wonderful.
And there have been a few instances where we have actually gotten together. Season one, it happened once.
Yeah, we spent about a week together in season one, maybe a week and a half.
Yeah.
And season two, it happened three times.
Right. And did some things in person, which is also fun. I mean, that's a different way of, there are obviously great benefits to being in the same room. One is just probably more fun. Is the main benefit, I think, you know, being face to face.
The feedback is also so much more obviously immediate when it's not iterative. It's, you know, we're sitting in a room and essentially, you know, improvising bits back and forth to each other, trying to make each other laugh or make each other just interested. And I think that kind of using each other as a live sounding board and collaborating on, oh, wow, actually, that's a really great chord progression. But what if you adjusted this one or made that a seventh? You know, I think the really it's so rare that we're able to co-write songs in the traditional sense where we are sitting in a room together and giving that instant feedback, which is interesting because it's also made us learn how to anticipate the tastes of the other. And I think as, you know, the more we iterate and hand things back and forth, I also think the better we get to know each other in a sense.
What's an example? Wait, I'm curious, actually, how have you, can you put your finger on something that you, for instance, catch or like tweak thinking like, oh, Andrew's not going to like that or Andrew will. Like
oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in season one, there were so many ideas that I had that were just way off the reservation that I have since realized like there are moments where I am a little self-indulgent about trying to get a joke in that and I feel like and also I am so left to my own devices, I am so willing to completely abandon any rules or rhythm or structure for the sake of getting an extra laugh in. And I think that has been a way that, like, I've significantly modulated that down. Because I have learned from you a really great understanding of not just, like structure and what is pleasurable for the listener, but also I think there comes a point at which, the self-indulgent, I'm doing this for the ha-ha, actually takes people out of the song. And I think, I feel like you have a really great ear for immersion and stuff that might take the listener out and make them all of a sudden a little less invested in the song, whether they're laughing or not.
Interesting. I feel like at this point, I'm kind of the cheerleader of your zany ideas, and then they might eventually get the boot from someone else, but I always love hearing them.
We do make some big swings now and again.
Good, good. Well, you got to in order to push the envelope. I'm curious on that note, which song proved the most challenging to finish from season one?
I have two answers to this, and Andrew, I don't know if you disagree with me here, but I think the most challenging one conceptually was a song in episode 6 called "You Didn't Know." But ironically, that process was one of the, I mean, our first draft, when we sent our first draft of a demo in, Vivienne and Adam, who's one of the writers on the show, both instantly responded to it and said, "Oh, this is terrific. You've done exactly what we wanted," which was a shock to us because we were feeling around blindfolded in the dark. That song was incredibly difficult. It is, I believe, five or six different voices, most of
No
them
real
sopranos.
structure, or no
Yeah,
traditional structure.
absolutely no structure because it is essentially a scene set to music. So it doesn't have those kind of repetitive structural elements like verses and choruses. It really, it has the shape of an argument, not the shape of a song. If anything, it has almost the shape of a court case, which is the
Right.
setting of that scene. And we were baffled as we stumbled our way through this, but ultimately the process of that one ended up being quite smooth because it didn't require a lot of iterating. Once we had a draft, they were very pleased with where we started. Whereas a song that I think we instantly understood and then completely whiffed on was in episode 2, there is a song in the soundtrack called "It Starts with Sorry" that we had initially doodled, and this is again speaks to, I think, that kind of like weird, maybe trying to serve jokes harder than serve music impulse. Our first version of that was a different song called "When You Apologize," which was funny, but the point of that song is, the responsibility of that song is to make you care about this new character that's been introduced this episode, Serpentius. And the goofy song that was really joke driven that we started with really did nothing to advance that.
Our
It was,
priority was saying the
yeah.
word chode as many times as possible
We did say the word chode, a tremendous,
within a 90-second song.
way more, it's, yeah, 90-second song, way more times than you would expect.
An uncomfortable amount of
And
times.
I'm, yes, we all like prominently using the word dingus as like a key, like pathos moment.
Okay.
It is, it missed the mark. Even though that one, I think for us conceptually, we were like, oh yeah, like silly apology song, we got it. But like, we didn't get it.
Wow. Well, I really want the outtakes, please. So please, I want to know this song that did not make it.
No, it did not make it for good reason, I think.
Well, the next song I'm going to play from the album is a banger called Poison, easily the most popular song on the album with over 136 million streams on Spotify alone. Performed by Blake Roman, here is Poison.
Known it when I looked in your red hot eyes.
your red hot lies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's the worst part of this hell? I can only blame myself. Cause I know you're poison, you're feeding me poison. Addicted to this feeling, I can't help but swallow up your poison. I made my choices. So good at telling you what you wanna hear. I disassociate, disappear. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So far beyond difficult to resist another gulp. Yeah, I know it's poison, you're feeding me poison. I'm choking from the taste and I can't help but swallow up your poison. I made my choices. Every night I'm wasted like there's no tomorrow. But it's always hollow, full of poison. I'm sick of the poison. Wish I had something to live for tomorrow.
Guys, talk about writing that song. How did it come together, and what did Blake contribute on his end?
Nothing. Sam sang the song. We just put Blake's name on it. No.
I will say, I think Poison was the first. It might have been. I think we certainly had this reaction on Happy Day in Hell, but after Poison, especially, I remember Andrew and I got on a Zoom call after we had finished, you know, directing Blake's performance, and going, "God, that kid is good." Like, we were just kind of shocked. Not just, I mean, you know, it is a dancey, poppy song. And the degree of pathos that Blake injects into that performance of what otherwise could be a really kind of straight down the middle pop performance. I mean, we were like speechless at the end of the session.
Doing his character's voice, Angel Dust's voice, and giving it emotion and sounding incredibly pop, like convincing on a poppy track. There's a lot going on there. Yeah, he was like doing quadruple duty. And I remember that was actually one, I think Sam and I were in person for the vocal record, just and we were watching Blake over Zoom. And yeah, we were both, yeah, very, I think, affected by that session in a way that, even over Zoom, it was, we got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Seeing him do, specifically the last line. Is the one
absolutely
that we
and heard. Also as a last sort of that kind of breakdown at the end, the softer, more emotional chorus, you know, when actors kind of, you know, compromise when actors sort of lose their cool and start being compromised by the emotions that they're feeling within a song, normally that also kind of compromises the performance in ways that are interesting and flawed and unique. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that was so stunning about Blake's performance is that he manages to inject those big, big feelings into those lines while still like really maintaining rhythm and melody. And it is still so, you know, cohesively a chorus while you still feel these really big things that he's feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, the breakdown at the end of the song is it's such an emotional impact on me because I'm watching the show for the first time, just being like, this is cute, this is silly, you know, I remember that song specifically at the end. I was like, oh, wait, I care about these weird characters. Like, I really care about how they're going to be moving forward in the story. And it wasn't until that episode that made me lock in. And that song specifically was like, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm emotionally invested. They caught me off guard. Now I need to watch it to the end.
I mean, I think Andrew and I were both caught off guard ourselves. And the process of that one, I mean, that song probably came together in under a week, if I had to guess. That came together faster. Yeah.
That was the first one we started before we realized how quickly we were going to have to write all the songs, I think.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Was like,
we kind
we
of
got
locked
plenty of
ourselves
time.
Into a pace that we then had to keep up.
Yeah. And that one, yeah, that may have been the first that we got going on.
Yeah. I think that was certainly the first demo that was finished.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, since the cast consists of like huge Broadway stars and voice actor icons, did any of the actors have notes or contributions to the songwriting process?
Well, I mean, I got to give credit to Alex Brightman, who constantly, I mean, nobody brings so many options the way he does. I mean, he will do the same line a dozen different ways if you let him. I mean, clearly, I don't know if he has some kind of background in improv comedy, but that wouldn't shock me. He really can do so much with just kind of the written word in the demo that he's given. One really iconic moment that I think stands out is in Hell is Forever, which is that kind of mouth guitar solo.
Yes.
Which where when he goes guitar solo, fuck yeah, as part of that little, you know, scatty moment. That was a complete ad lib on his part and became such an iconic moment in the song that I think there's now like there's a shirt of that, of his character going guitar solo. Fuck
you remember
yeah.
What we had originally in that?
Yes, I remember. Originally, it was a much Jack Blackier, like, like it was very much just kind of a mouth guitar solo that I think... And it's a brilliant impulse on his part. The idea that Adam, also as a character, is so obnoxious that he's not just going to give you a mouth guitar solo, he's going to announce that it's a mouth guitar solo.
Yes.
Even though, as a character, he also plays guitar. He needs to do the mouth solo and announce it as what it is. And I think it really has this quality of like a guy jamming out in the driver's seat of his pickup truck. And in that kind of, he brings like a really kind of relatable sort of bully to Adam that like everyone's met that guy.
I remember another example of, someone just bringing something that sort of diverged a bit from the demo in a good way, which is always a great joy when that happens, was Darren Criss in Welcome to Heaven. And he just put his own kind of like unique stank on a bunch of those funky riffs, the vocal lines. I remember getting a lot of different options with him. And then we sort of pieced together our favorites afterwards. But yeah, I remember that session being a creative one and that we were sort of like, going
super
off
collaborative. Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the great things about Darren too, is that he's not just a performer, he's a writer, he's a producer, he really is, you know, such a creative multi-hyphenate, and he really brought that to the session. You know, Peter as a character, his character was as written in the demo, like it was just kind of like saccharine and clubby and poppy, and he gave St. Peter this kind of Michael Jackson-y stank, which was I mean, and from there, henceforth going forward, when we've had stuff that we're like, oh, you know, we want St. Peter in something else going in the future, that now is front of mind. It's like, well, now we know how Darren performs that character. And it totally informs the way we write for that character. I think that has been the really exciting change from season one to season two, is not just knowing these characters as well as we do, but knowing these actors as well as we do.
Amazing. Now, Keith David, obviously an amazing, iconic voice actor and cast member of Hazbin Hotel. He got to sing the song Loser Baby. And, you know, he has such an amazing voice. Now, were you guys aware that you were writing for his range for Loser Baby? Or how did that kind of collaborative process work on making that song?
Yes, we did know that Keith was going to be playing Husk. And Interestingly, Keith was perhaps, yeah, the only actor who was very interested in scheduling a or in person, or at that point it was Zoom, but a rehearsal with us, which yeah didn't happen at all with anyone else, but has since happened a few times with Keith, and just is yeah really shows his commitment. He wants to get it right. He wants to put in the time, which is
Absolutely.
fantastic.
And I mean, when we were told that Keith was going to be Husk and that we would be writing this song for him, obviously we were both familiar with his role singing in Princess and the Frog. And we had spent a while kind of online digging up a lot of his, live singing stuff. He does every once in a while, he'll do like kind of a piano cabaret type show, that is sort of a solo show, and he sings songs that mean a lot to him. And that, I think, even more so than the Princess and the Frog, like that really was exciting to us because he brought this incredible crooner energy that I think we really tried to hold on to as much as we could with Husk. Because I mean, as a performance, it couldn't be more different from his songs in The Princess and the Frog. Like it has 0% in common with Friends on the Other Side, his big solo number in that song. It just is. It lives in kind of a croonery, almost a Randy Newman-y kind of space. But it was thanks to looking up and watching these live shows that he had done that we understood, like, oh, like here is a really great angle through which to approach Keith as a performer. And I think he just is, as Andrew said, he's so committed. He puts in the time and it shows.
Amazing. Well, let's hear that song. Here is the iconic song, A Loser Baby.
So things look bad and your back's against the wall. Your whole existence seems fucking hopeless. You're feeling filthy as a dive bar bathroom stall. Can't face the world sober and dopeless. You've lost your way. You think your life is wrecked. Well, let me just say you're correct.
Wait, what?
You're a loser, baby, a loser, goddamn baby. You're a fucked up little whiny bitch.
Hey.
You're a loser just like me.
Thanks, asshole.
You're a screws loose boozer and only one star reviewer. You're a power bottom at rock bottom, but you got company.
This supposed to make me feel better?
There was a time I thought that no one could relate to the gruesome ways in which I'm damaged. But letting walls down, it can sometimes set you straight. We're all living in the same shit sandwich.
I sold my soul to a psychopathic freak.
And you think that makes you unique? Get out of here, man. We're both losers, baby, we're losers. It's okay to be a
coked up, dick-sucking hoe.
Maybe that's fine by me.
I'm a loser, honey, a schmoozer and a dummy. But at least I know I'm not alone.
You're a loser just like
me.
I got an appetite for gambling.
I got an appetite for sampling every drug and sex toy I can find.
Go ahead, baby, sing that song, come on.
I got no holes left to deflower.
I sold my soul to save my power. Now I'm on that demon's leash.
I'm trapped and it gets worse with every hour. You're a loser, baby.
A loser, but just maybe if we eat shit together, things will end up differently. It's time to lose your self-loathing. Excuse yourself, let hope in, baby. Play your card, be who you are. A loser, just like me.
When it comes to songwriting, is it easier to write higher energy numbers, or do ballads come more easy for you?
I think it's easier when one or ideally both of us are keyed into whatever the emotion is of the goal of the scene slash the song. So that could be, I think it's more about, for me at least, it's more about do I understand why the character is singing, and can I sort of like find a tap into that energy? And if
I
not, then I
totally
hope
agree.
Dan can.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think for us, it's because it is a musical in the traditional sense, the most important thing I think for us creatively as we kick off a song is understanding that like we are writing a scene and do we understand how that scene is supposed to go? Because if we understand the scene and the beats and the character and the sort of the arc that they're on, putting the song together is generally easy unless there is some very strange stylistic or genre challenge that we need to adhere to, which has happened a couple times. But I think, generally speaking, when we know what the character's feeling and can easily express that in words, like it doesn't really matter what genre whether we're going, up tempo, down tempo, Latin pop, piano ballad. I think whatever it's going to be, if we have a sense of what the character needs to express, it's going to happen quickly.
I wonder how many revisions do songs go through? I feel like there is this stigmatism with the creative process that you have to be perfect right out the gate. And I think a lot of people get distraught that they feel like they did something and it wasn't perfect the first time. So, can you just talk about the revision process?
Sure. I think, every once in a while, which is rare, we get extremely lucky, like something like You Didn't Know, where we deliver a demo and the creative team goes, wow, that is exactly what we're looking for. And I will say, more often than not, that happens on songs where the creative team doesn't really know what they're looking for. They know what they need out of the song, but they don't really have a built-in mental idea of this is what this song needs to be. I think generally we get away with the fewest iterations on the songs where it is the most open-ended for them mentally. Whereas I think there are songs where we've iterated 12-ish times. Of new, front to back demos. It runs the gamut. A piece of advice that I like to give since starting to do this Comic Con thing, and I will have occasionally people ask, what is a piece of songwriting advice? Is I like to say like nothing starts as a great thing. I think the most important thing is don't try to edit while you're writing. Just write out the shitty thing and then edit it and make it a good thing. Because I think without the context of having finished the bad version of it, I don't think you can even know if it's good or not. I mean, you can write like four brilliant bars and go, okay, I'm on to something great. And then as you continue the song, realize that the song sucks. So I think if you're holding out for perfection on iteration one, you're never going to finish a song.
And I think this is where it helps to ha that there are two of us, because it we have a sound built sort of built-in sounding boards. So for instance, if I do a doodle like, oh, I don't know about this, Sam might open up the logic session and be like, oh, I like this part, but let's chop it here and then do something else. That's a very common occurrence, and something that helps sort of, I think, almost speed up our collaboration, which is helpful given the tight timelines we have had to sort of work within. Where there's, yeah, this internal sort of judging, immediate judging, and then like iterating on that. So before it even gets to sort of third party ears, we've already done kind of our own
Yeah.
feedback round, essentially.
That's a really good point. And I think to that end, trying to like write the crappy thing first, I know if I doodle something that like I think there's potential, but I'm not really in love with it, I know Andrew is going to hear it the next day and go, oh, actually, here are the things that I identify as good within that. Mm. And it's almost we're editing each other rather than editing ourselves, which is so helpful.
It's also very, I love having, so for instance, Sam does something he's not crazy about. There's going to be something in there that that will trigger something in me, and likewise, or goes both ways. It's only helpful to hear each other's ideas, because they'll either lead to something that directly follows the idea, or just like trigger something else that's like related, even tangentially, that wouldn't have existed if not for that original, draft of or little little doodle.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Absolutely.
I can think of a very specific example. In fact, there was an intro that I was desperately trying to make work when we were writing on season two of the show. There was an intro for a song where I was like, no, this is the intro. It's this like piano line and it's gotta be this certain way. And we started with this intro, created what might be the verse that kicks off from the intro, then realized, oh, the verse is good. This intro sucks. And we didn't end up using the thing that kicked off the second idea.
Mm.
But there is some, sometimes there is the good idea comes not directly from what gets recorded, but from what gets inspired by what gets recorded. And then the initial germ of the idea ends up going away.
That's fascinating. Well, I want to, pump up the emotion, slow it down a little bit, and play a new track. This is called More Than Anything.
Charlie, you don't understand. Heaven never listens. They didn't listen to me. They won't listen to you.
You don't know that.
I do. You didn't know that when tried this all before. My dreams were too hard to defend, and in the end I won't lose it all again. Now you're the only thing worth fighting for. More than I just don't want you to be crushed by them like I was.
Dad, when I was young, I didn't really know you at all. I always felt so small, but I heard your stories and I was enthralled. The tales about your lofty dreams, I listened breathlessly.
The apple doesn't fall far.
Took you a while.
I've missed that smile.
All that I'm hoping, now that my eyes are open, is that we can start again, not be pulled apart again.
I have a question regarding working on Has Been Hotel. Was using all the strong language in the songs intimidating, or did it kind of come naturally to you?
Oh, so freeing for me. I have done mostly kids' music, apart from my collaborations with Sam. So this was the biggest breath of fresh air I could imagine. Just having those bumpers lifted. Not completely, because there was, as Sam mentioned, that one song start where we introduce all sorts of interesting visual language, and Vivian decided was, you know, went several bridges too far in that direction. So, you know, there are some guardrails there for us, but just generally being able to open up the possibilities, you know, we're not limited by standards and practices and worrying about, you know, children watching the show, which they do watch the show, but
yeah,
that's not our problem.
No.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's funny. I think for as blue as a show as this can be, it's often the case that the soundtrack of the show is usually the cleanest part of the show, the cleanest, most earnest part of the show. And I think that was our big learning experience with scrapping the song that eventually became It Starts With Sorry, was our job is not to make the dirty show dirty. Our job is to make the dirty show emotionally compelling. Yes. And there are some times that because of the show we're in, that we're using that language.
And that was 100% Viv's directive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So full credit to her for really
reeling us in on that too.
Mm. Yeah. 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 And also making us understand that, which is true to me. I mean, for musical theater, that is what a song is for. It's for conveying true, real emotion, not just, you know, cheap laughs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you guys really accomplished that. I mean, growing up, I was a huge fan of Rent, and hearing Daphne's voice, Stephanie Ruben Vega, in the cast was so revitalizing for me. It just was like so fun to hear her on this album. The next song I'm going to play is Out for Love. But before I play it, I want to hear about how this kind of flamingo vibe song kind of came to be. And, you know, it's giving Eurovision Song Contest. It's so fun. What's the influence and direction that went into this song?
Well, Vivian's. Yeah, we definitely got a note. Or the character, Daphne's character, Carmilla, has a sort of Latin vibe. All of her music was supposed to. That came from Vivian. Yeah, Sam, do you remember the specific sort of references for this song?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I was going to chime in to just touch on the Daphne of it all as well. Truly a larger than life performer. There are so few voices in musical theater where you know in an instant that's Daphne Ruben Vega. And as a production, also, we've been so lucky because Keith David is, of course, another one of those voices. Alex Brightman as well. You know, like there are these performers when you hear them, you're like, oh, this could only be you. And Daphne, like, what an iconic. Just an iconic voice. That Out for Love was the second song that we had written for her, and we'd already recorded her on two more songs, on a song called Respectless and a song called Whatever It Takes. So we had gotten a little more acquainted with her voice and writing for her voice as well. And I think in terms of, you know, the references that we had, it was very just kind of like up tempo early 2000s modern Latin pop. And it, you know, this song didn't just need to be poppy and exciting, but it also needed to have that kind of driving energy of a montage. Mm-hmm. In that this song taking place over the course of this sort of sparring match between Carmilla and Vaggy. You know, this song is kind of the training montage. And so it needed that kind of driving, almost galloping beat.
Yeah.
And that was a very big part of what went into it creatively. And we had found, I believe, from Whatever It Takes in episode 3, I believe we had found a great session guitarist as well that we worked with on this.
Fantastic. Well, let's hear it. Here is the song Out for Love.
I see you're driven by your detestation. Your every step is stoked with animus. You need a different type of motivation, or there's no way that you can handle this. I know you're thirsting for vengeance, baggy, you're out for blood. But you'll only stand a chance if you're out for love. Out for love, love. Think of who you care about, protect them and be out for love, love. You're gonna fight without gloves long as you're out for love. Fuel yourself with the fear of losing that somebody who's your reason to live. Harness your heart and you can't help choosing to fight with all you can give. I know you're thirsting for vengeance, faggy, you're out for blood. But you'll only stand a chance if you're out for love. Out for love, love, love. Think of who you care about, protect them and be out for love, love. You're gonna fight without gloves, and when that push comes to shove, yeah, you just might rise above long as you're out for love.
Guys, we've reached the end of the show, and I have to ask you what I ask all my guests on Studio Soundtrack is, what was the first album you purchased, and what was the last thing you listened to?
The first album I purchased, I believe, was Bad Hair Day by Weird Al.
Wow. good pick.
Yeah, that I, yep. 8-year-old Andrew knew,
holds up,
knew what to spend his allowance on.
Yes.
What was yours, Sam?
Oh, my first album, the first time I bought physical media of music was I bought 2 tape cassettes. The first one was This Fire by Paula Cole featuring Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
Yes.
That was at the time my favorite song. And the second one was, of course, Bat Out of Hell 2 by Meatloaf. So I feel like I was a very, you know, horny 8-year-old.
A reference. If we listen to some Meatloaf for Has-Been.
Absolutely. I mean, the Jim Steinman kind of power piano rock was very much a reference for Hell Is Forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you can hear the Weird Al influence as well.
Yes. Yeah.
On every note.
Every yes. Now,
and Andrew, what's the last thing you've listened
to? Yeah, last thing you listened to.
I wish it was Amish Paradise. That would just be... the last thing I listened to was I think it was actually a Kesha song. Just this morning.
That's fun.
Yeah.
The last thing I listened to I'm gonna double check the name of the song. It is, of course, that's what it's called. It's called My Love, Mine, All Mine by Mitski.
And I'll just throw it in because I sometimes answer this question, is the last thing that I listened to was, I'm not proud of it, but it's the A Bad Bitch Academy by Paris Hilton that she just released.
Oh, gotcha.
Ooh.
I just saw it on Instagram and I was like, I need to listen to what this song is about.
That's the title of the song?
It's called BBA, right? Bad Bitch Academy, but yes.
Featuring Megan Thee Stallion. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Wow. I'm influencing. I love it. Anyways. Yeah,
I am influenced.
Wow. Okay. Well, anyways, thank you so much for joining me on Studio Soundtracks, only on Dub Lab Radio. Our outro music is going to be a song from Has-Been called Ready for This, which is a rousing cast number. I'm so excited for y'all to listen to it. So stick around to the end of the show. And thank you so much, Sam and Andrew, for joining me on Studio Soundtracks.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Have you ever wanted something that was so clear in your mind that you could taste it?
You mean like human flesh?
Sort of. It's a feeling like a rumbling in your gut that you could finally be faced with a billion needy faces. I guess what I mean to say is, for the first time in my life, I might have to be ready for this. Ready to be the one who's leading from the front. Gotta come into my own. Gotta come into my throne. Gotta take charge and defend my only home. And although I kind of feel unsteady now, I need to be ready for this. Have you ever felt like you're willing to die to save the people of your city?
By die, do you mean use my teeth to rip flesh apart?
That's a start! 'Cause right now we need a leader, and it seems to me that destiny has picked me to be that, if you'll permit me. So who's with me? Wouldn't it be super to see more of hell? Join up now if you like travel. Come on, boys, hop in the saddle. A lot of sights to see en route to my hotel. Not to mention the camaraderie. Yes, sirree, you'll form life-changing friendships with the folks along the way.
And feast on all the angels you can eat.
Okay.
Great.